Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, and we're going to put a fun, informative, and just hot topic on the Southwest tonight. The name of our show is Getting Potted in the Desert. How fun is that? And we know in Mrs. Green's world, we like to have fun. Joining me in studio is my friend and a fellow friend of Mother Earth in all that that implies. Her name is Mary Lee Pengman. She is the founder and former owner of the Contained Gardener in Tucson, Arizona, and is known by many as the desert's potted garden expert. She is an author, and tonight we're going to talk about Mary Lee's journey and about her fun, informative, and absolutely gorgeous book, user-friendly book, Getting Potted in the Desert, a monthly garden guide for desert pots. And you know, just by the title, that she's got a great sense of humor. So we are so happy to have you here. It's great to have fun with friends in studio about important subjects like this. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Mrs. Green. It is wonderful to see you again and to be here.
Finally. It's like finally we're having Mary Lee on the show. I'm really excited. Okay, so let's start with the basics. I always like to, you know, we should have that little thing. Let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. So what is container gardening? I believe there are people out there that would say, what is that? What are you talking about?
Well, you know, a lot of people will think of container gardening as gardening in pots. And I always looked at it as anything that is contained. So a raised bed is a container garden, a wheelbarrow is a container garden. And then, of course, all of the different kinds of pots that we can plant things in are containers.
And I have a friend who put her bathtub out in the yard and made it beautiful. She made a beautiful contained garden out of it and showed us pictures. Lives out on the northwest side, and it doesn't look awful. It looks hysterical.
Yeah, a lot of people have done that, or sinks. I've even seen people do it in toilets.
That, I swear, I was going to bring up, and you beat me to it, because that's fun too. And we're, if you have a book named Getting Potted in the Desert, anything is possible. Okay, so talk about, I think, therefore I am, no, Getting Potted in the Desert, the desert speaks, and sometimes it speaks loudly and harshly, and we have extreme periods with no water. So is gardening in the desert different from anywhere else?
It certainly is. And you talk about extremes. So the first extreme, of course, is water. Here in Tucson, we have about 11 inches of rain a year. And so you compare that to the hundreds of inches that you get up in the Northwest or something like that, or whatever they have in the rainforest. That's got to be lots and lots of inches. But also, besides that, in the desert, typically you have very hot conditions, especially in the summer months, and a long summer, not just a couple months like in New York State where I came from. And then you have, really, you get cold in the winter. And depending if you're high desert, mid desert, or low desert, it will dictate how cold you get in the winter. But you usually have a 30 degree differential between your daytime temperature and your nighttime temperatures. So that can put a lot of stress on plants. And then you have to think about, well, what are you planting and how much sun is it going to get? Because our desert sun is so intense. And you want to think about that. And then what happens in the shade? And what happens when the sun moves through the seasons? Because one place that's in the sun now will be in the shade in the summer.
And, you know, whenever I have shows on about anything to do with growing, not just gardening for beautiful plants and flowers, but food, what is your finger on the pulse telling us about container gardening? Is it growing? Are people really, what's the growth factor?
If you look at any of the trends around gardening, one of the greatest growth rates is in container gardening, and that really has only fallen second to sustainable gardening, with food and veggies being part of it.
So why do you think that is? Why the interest now in container gardening? Is it something that's easier for people? Does it manage, you know, water better? Why is there such a growth? Because it's everywhere.
Well, I think there's two main reasons. One is that it is easier. And with all the baby boomers now aging, as I'm a baby boomer, and I don't want to be digging down in the ground, and it's much easier to reach a pot. And you can change your mind and move things around. And then also you can dictate how much water you're going to use by what you're planting. So a lot of people will do that. And then the population is aging, so they need something that's easier and something that they can even carry home, because you can get a pot home, get the soil home. But if you're thinking of digging a big bed to do some flowers or your vegetables and herbs, that's a lot of work. And a lot of people aren't going to have time or ability to do so.
You know, our contained gardening in the front entryway to our house, I mean, we have it, you know, Mr. Green waters it, but it's beautifully self-contained. I mean, we went and intentionally got desert plants that, you know, are not increasing, you know, really water intensive. And it's like creating your own habitat. It brings in the pollinators. We have hummingbirds and butterflies and bees. So there's a real upside to, besides having an edible garden, which I think a lot of people are putting in containers, the beauty of that, the joy that it brings. I'm sure you can speak to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can add some of your veggies and herbs right to those beautiful pots. You don't have to say, well, this area over on the south 40 of the home is going to be veggies and herbs. You can put them in. And that was one thing I forgot to say earlier, that another reason why it's growing so much is because people are downsizing in their homes. And as new homes are being built, a lot of them are smaller, closer communities, sustainable communities, as you've seen come up here in Tucson. And so the only way they can garden is in pots, because they don't have the plots of land that we might have grown up with.
And it's an important touch to keep in your life, the whole green and nature and staying connected if you move to a smaller place and you don't have the land to look out on. I mean, there's just no downside. And you mentioned it briefly, but just let's go over it again. In terms of, you know, water is such an issue, not just here in the desert. Let's face it, 2,300 counties in the country are experiencing extreme drought. And then you have, you know, the floods in other parts of the country and snow in August. But is it so much water, more water efficient, I would think?
Yes, because it allows you to make choices. And one of the reasons I got into container gardening in the desert was because we have this beautiful desert, but it's very subtle in its colors and its changes in colors. And I wanted some constant color around me. And the way to do that was in pots. But as we got more and more water conscious in the desert, then you can take, let's say, three pots, which often you'll put three pots together.
Right.
And you can put a low water plant in two of them. Maybe one is a cactus or succulent. And in the third pot, you put some flowers. And so that pot gets a little bit more water, but the other two is very little water. And yet you have that oasis happening in there by the plants you've selected. And when you do pots rather than a bed or ground planting, the water is very directed to the pots, so there's not the overspray. You know how as you go through the city, you'll see some, unfortunately, we still have grass, and all of the irrigation's going on, and the sidewalk is getting a lot of water. And I've never seen a sidewalk grow. So, you know, in a pot, it's directed into the pot. I run my irrigation systems to flowers 2 or 3 minutes, not 30, 40, an hour or more to the landscaping. And you can even use big pots and grow some trees, have some fruit in your trees, and still you're running the water very short period of time. And when you figure out the mass of the irrigation spigots that are in there, the amount that you're having to direct to that pot is significantly less than what you would do to anything in the ground.
And, you know, I really want to go into talking about your book, because it's so incredibly, it's not just beautiful, it's really user-friendly. But part of the challenge for us desert dwellers, I believe, is making those conscious choices and valuing a place where you can go to get good advice on what you should be planting in the desert that's going to still... I want flowers. I'm a Jersey girl. I want things to bloom. And there are, you know, desert-friendly plants, bushes, flowering plots, that things that you can put in. So is that... What is your advice to us on that in terms of doing our homework?
Well, we can have flowers 365 days a year, which is so different than people up in the north or many other areas, even of the world. But we have to know what to plant and when to plant it and where to plant it and then how to take care of it. So one of the things that happened in thinking about the book was that I taught a lot of classes through my business and through the botanical gardens and other garden clubs and things. And people kept saying, where is this information? And I said, well, unfortunately, it's all in my head. And if we were on TV, I'd be pointing at my head right now. So...
Use that visual.
Yeah. And people would say, well, Mary Lee, when are you going to get the book out? And I said, as soon as I have time, I will. And it was like 8 years in coming. I mean, you know, Mrs. Green, you did it. And so
we... Sure, in your spare time, write a book.
Right. And so you do have to follow what plants are going to grow in the different seasons. So the people from up north would plant pansies in the summer, and here we have them all winter long. And they'll even go through a frost and bounce right back, which is probably amazing to someone out of Minnesota. And so it's a matter of really talking to your local nursery people.
Right.
Don't go to the big box stores because, you know what, they're bringing in plants often that will have part sun on the label. And here in the desert, with our intense sun, it has to be in the shade. But the label won't say that. But the nurseries, when they bring in plants, they're specifically labeled so that they have the correct information for the consumer right there.
And since a lot of people in Tucson will listen to this show, we have amazing locally owned places to go that are not big box stores.
Absolutely. Any part of the area counties has local nurseries where they can buy their plants, and they should, because those are the people who understand and know the plants, know how they grow, and know when to plant them and where to plant them.
And the customer service, like I go in green, literally, no pun intended, and they want to help you. They walk
yes.
you to, and I say the pot's like this big, and it's really, you know, I will do a shout out. I do go to Green Things because mm-hmm. it's right down the street. And the people there really know what they're talking about. And, you know, I don't miss opportunities to say, try to make other choices than big box stores, valuing the people that work there mm-hmm. and all of that. But there's really a different experience when you support the locals. And I know
absolutely.
You're a major localist, too.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's like there's just more than just you're doing the right thing. It's a really entirely different experience. You don't feel harried and standing in line and try and find the scanner, and you have people.
Right. And, you know, we didn't even mention the soil that you need to grow things in the pots. And your local nurseries will have soil that's going to work here. And people always ask me, well, what soils do you recommend? And I know they're shopping price and they're looking at the big box stores. But I tell them, you know what, you really need to look at an open bag because I can't tell you a brand. They change all the time. You're spending different kinds of money for the same size, but the products aren't the same. So local nurseries are the ones who are going to have the information.
Well, like I said, it's just an entirely different experience for anything that you do. I think we covered this, but how can you use to make sure that water is used more responsibly in containers? Because people could still abuse it. They could leave the hose on and let it run. But I think one of your mantras is this is really an opportunity in a way to save on your water bill, save on wasting water, and, you know, water, use it wisely.
Well, you know, one thing people try to do when they have an irrigation system to their landscape plants, they try to hook that up to the pots. Now, if you remember, I said a few minutes ago that really you could water your pots on irrigation for 3 to 5 minutes. But if you have trees or shrubs out there on irrigation, those are getting watered usually between an hour to 2 hours and less often during the week. And so if you're watering an hour to a pot that I just said needed 3 minutes, think of all of the water that's just going back into the ground, and it's not doing anything any good, because normally that's not where your roots for your trees are. So that's one thing right there. And then deciding how many to have, what size pots to have, because if you have small ones, you're going to have to water them more often.
Right.
And besides being extra work, it's going to be a waste. And then where they're placed and what's in them. So there's a lot of variables that you want to think about. And if you're really being absolutely utmost water conservative, then you're probably going to use succulents and cactus. And those are living works of art in a pot.
They are. I'm still hardwired for a little bit of flowers, but
yes,
they're gorgeous. And they bloom. And I use this on my Facebook a lot. The desert speaks. You just have to listen.
Right. Absolutely.
Even now in November, when I'm taking my morning walks, not frequently enough, I take my phone with me now, and I don't talk on the phone, but I always see something in the desert that gets my attention, and I want to stop and, you know, snap it and put it on Facebook or Instagram because I took the time to just stop. And it could be a bird in a cactus, mm-hmm, or a hawk,
right,
sitting on a limb. It's the desert is just that beauty that we all fall in love with.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the book. And it is, in case you just joined us, Getting Potted in the Desert, a monthly garden guide for desert pots. And I want to talk a little bit about the feeling and at what point you decided to write a book, because you know I'm intrigued. You labored through my book with me. It was like labor, swear. It was like giving birth. I'm like, when is this thing going to be over with? You do get that feeling, I think most authors do, and you want to do one more edit and one more footnote and one more this. So at what point did you decide, I'm going to write a book and I'm really going to do it?
Well, I started the business, I have to think back to this, in 1998, and I sold it in 2012. So probably around the sixth, seventh year in the business, and I had started doing classes. I was a master gardener. I taught for the master gardeners to the public. I also taught the master gardeners about how to get potted in the desert. And I realized that this information needed to be recorded somehow.
Right, right.
And so actually that's what I did. I started recording all of my talks because, you know, you never know when you have those pearls of wisdom that you're not going to remember later.
Like, what did I say that sounded so smart?
Exactly.
That was so smart.
And I always wanted to get it done. But, you know, running a business, as you know, is really very time intensive. And to try to get it done at that point, it just wasn't happening. And I think I wrote that introduction probably six times. And then finally, 8 years later, I said, okay, either it's going to get done or it's going off the plate. And I couldn't stop. You know, I sold the business, but I couldn't stop educating. I couldn't stop sharing all of the knowledge that I'd gained through those 15 years of getting people potted. And just let it go. I mean, what do you do with all this information? So it was something that was going to become a reality. And I finished my part and then had the concept for the book. I wanted to make it very user-friendly. I wanted it something you could stick in your bag and take to the nursery, something you could fold over so that you, and that would lay flat because you're going to put it down on a bench while you're doing something.
Love it. There's a spiral since we don't have TV yet. There's a spiral. So it really is, when I say user-friendly, on every level. So I wish I could, you know, hold it up and show the viewers, but use your imagination and hopefully you're going to go check out where to get it anyway.
Yeah, so then we sent it off to the graphics designer, and I had decided that I was going to publish it myself because I'd gone to several of our Festival of Books here in Tucson and kept hearing that if you get picked up by a publisher, that it could be 2 or 3 years.
Yes, a minimum of 18 months to 2 years.
Yes, and so we'd already waited 8 for me just to finish it. So did I want to wait another 2 or 3 years? I was like, no, I'll have to do it myself. And it's nice because then you have more control over what's happening. And, you know, it was like that first baby that you wonder, what's it going to really look like once you hold it in your hands? And so it was pretty amazing when it came out.
You had to feel great and cry.
Did.
Like, seriously,
yes.
It's a gorgeous book. And
thank
I'm
you.
Not just saying that. It's
thank
really
you.
Beautiful. And let's talk a little bit about the format, because I think that's really important, too. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like it. It's month by month.
Yes.
Which really matters for the desert.
It's funny. Someone said to me, well, is there an index? And I'm like, well, no, because it's month by month in January through December. And each month talks about what to do in your potted garden. It does also roses and citrus specifically, because those are great needs of people. It talks about what to plant. It adds in what veggies and herbs you can plant that month, and then how to take care of it all. And also it has warnings for each month, what you really need to watch out for. Like when we're in monsoon season, what you need to do to batten down the hatches with your pots, because you don't want them being knocked over by the wind. And so it has all of those for each of the months. And each month also has a plant, one of my favorite plants. And there's a picture of it and talks about it and how you would use it. And that was really fun. It was hard to decide, though.
It makes you want to turn the page and see what's on next. It does. I mean,
great.
It really does. And I would not in any way, shape, or form consider myself a gardener. I love having a contained garden outside in the front and outside in the back. And it just, it brings you beauty every day if you stop and take a look at
and
it.
And I've always admired the gardens you have when I get to come to your home in the studio, Mrs. Green.
It's a welcoming feeling. It's good. It's really good.
So the rest of the book, after December, then there's different bonus chapters, I called them. And it talks about how to select plants, how to select pots, how to do some design with your pots. And then also there's plant lists for different seasons. There's the javelina and rabbit resistant plant list, which some people have said that's going to be their most used part, because that is definitely a problem. And just different things so that you can succeed within whatever level desert that you're in, like I said before, high, medium, and low desert.
And this is not a trick question. You said, are you going to throw me any curveballs? I never want to throw my guests any curveballs, especially if they're a friend, because payback's challenge a challenge. Isn't that what I'm supposed to say? But what about in the years that you have been doing this, which have added up, how have you seen the demographic change of people that are interested in gardening, or have you?
Well, as a business owner, I was shocked, because in the first years, my clients were all retired, retirees. And then I did a demographic check about in the early 2000s, probably, and realized that most of my clients were between 45 and 60, so not retirees. They were professionals and looking to either, they don't know how to do it because they've moved here from another area, or they don't have time. And then, since then, what I've noticed with really so much emphasis on slow food and growing your own food and all of these kinds of things, that we're seeing more and more young people get involved in gardening. And it's pretty amazing to see that, because so many things, you know, you worry about them, like something like the opera or the symphony. Are they going to have the young people coming up and filling the seats as we lose our older population? And that's not happening in gardening. People want to grow things that are going to be usable and not just pretty.
And I think there's a lot of people that families are involved. There's nothing greater gift that you can give your kids than figuring out ways to connect them to nature. So it's multi-generational, and having kids involved, it's just a win-win-win.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the when the book got delivered, what was the master plan for getting it in people's hands? I mean, that's the challenge. I want everybody to buy my book, not because I want them to know who Mrs. Green is, but because of what lies in between the covers. And I feel the same about yours. It's just a great book to have, and I'll use it for whenever I replace anything, because it's that, see, I can go look and say, oh, some things died, and it's September. Let's see what Mary Lee has to say, the potted gardener. So what is your plan, and how's that going? It's constants.
Absolutely. But it's pretty amazing. I've sold more books than I thought I would in the beginning. I was very, very fortunate that the relationship I had with a local garden reporter for our local newspaper, Elena Okoba, she wrote an article about the book, and it was a full page
spread. It was
spread.
Beautiful, yes.
And to have her do that and make it so beautiful and the information so wonderful. So that was right when the book came out, and I had that weekend, I had 30 sales right then. And it was like, whoa, what's going on? And, you know, and then you have fulfillment too. You've got to get these books out, right? And so then I've done different kinds of signings, different kinds of events. I've used social media a lot. I have my own mailing list that I do e-blasts. And the Botanical Gardens, which was featured in that article because I still teach classes there, they did a book signing. They've sold, I think we're somewhere around 180 books themselves.
That's great.
And, you know, a lot of my colleagues in the world of business, there's others who have written books, and they're mostly business books, but they're amazed at the sales because I'm reaching the 500 copies sold point, and that has been just since the end of August. And that's just with me doing it. So what I want to do next is people are having ideas about what they need and what they want. So I'm going to, in a couple of weeks, do a survey out to my purchasers and ask them to tell me what do they want me to do. Do they want some different booklets about other subjects? Because it's not done. Maybe they'd like an online course that they could take that shows them how to do this. And so we'll see what they say, because I want to do what my readers want.
Ask them. I know.
Yes.
It's so respectful and so the way the new paradigm wants to be.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, I just did a show, Charity Water, national, raising money for charity all over the world. And they are so successful because it's participatory.
Right.
You can run your own campaign on their website for how you want to get water to Liberia.
Ah.
And they give 100% of the money. But people are so engaged because people want to be. They don't want that passive piece of it. So you asked my question, what's next for you in container gardening education in the desert? But the most important thing is, as we draw to a close soon, is how do people get your book?
Well, they can go online to my website. And, you know, the title of the book is Getting Potted in the Desert. Well, there's the website. Go right there. And you can order it, and then I will personally sign it and put in a couple freebies and send that off to you. It does go media mail, so it takes a few days. And also here in Tucson, you can get them at Antigone's Bookshop, that's downtown, and at the Botanical Gardens. And Savano also has them. And so you can always check on my website to see where is it being sold right now. But really save yourself time and gas, and you can just order it on my site of Getting Potted in the Desert.
And you get a personal, from the author. I think that's really a special piece of it. And you know what else? I think it's really, those numbers are staggering. They're epic. When I put my book out, I really didn't do enough research because it was on Amazon, so we went through Amazon. And a lot of choices. I wanted it to be available. And to be a bestseller on Amazon, if you hit 600 in sales in the first week, that's all it takes.
Wow.
You think, because they have 8 million books.
Yeah.
So you're getting close to the best-selling numbers by doing it what I would call more organically.
Yes, grassroots, absolutely.
Grassroots.
Absolutely.
And it works. And it'll.
I do plan to get it out onto Amazon and as an ebook, but you know, you go one step at a time because there's a lot to do.
Lots of choices and constant work. I mean, mine came out in February, and I'm doing a book signing at the Aveda Institute because there's a lot about natural products in my book, and it's constant. If you want to sell books, you have to constantly be putting yourself out there. That is certainly something I've learned. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, spending some time with the desert's potted garden expert, Mary Lee Pangman. I cannot say enough about taking a look at her book and consider getting it if you have any interest in planting anything outside. Next week, November 7th, Michael Schumann, The Making of a Localist, 8 books. He's an amazing human being doing great things for the planet. And November 10th on our Down to Earth, Andrew Quigley from City of Tucson, we're going to be testing our recycling IQ. They're really suffering from contamination issues. Thanks for being with us, Mary Lee. Love having you as my friend, and thanks for what you're doing. Make it a great green week, everybody.